Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, welcome to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. As I've been saying throughout the evening, it's Jake Watson in this evening for Johnny Burrow. We'll be back next week, but I'm reunited with the boys.
Oi, oi.
How Hello. Are you doing? It's been a while.
It's been a while, mate.
It's good to see you both. It's good to see you both. And it's been an interesting week for you chaps over on the Fulhamish pod. Exciting news.
Busy week, yeah.
Yeah,
really.
very busy week. Obviously, the main thing is the fixtures came out last week.
Of course,
well,
yeah.
We'll get onto that, of yeah. course. We'll
so,
get
so
onto
main thing,
that.
But yeah, no, we secured an interview with Fulham. Was it Director of Football Analytics? Or
Operations. Director
Operations?
Of Football Operations.
Big dog.
Yeah, the big dog, Tony Carr.
And Vice Chairman.
Oh, and vice chairman. He's got multiple jobs. You know, All Elite Wrestling,
yes.
The Jaguars. So Sammy and Jack, who are on the pod most weeks, they spoke to Tony Khan this week. And yeah, just you know, he gets a lot of stick from the fans.
Yeah.
Myself, very much included in this.
I remember.
And so, yeah, they spoke to him. I think it was just, it wasn't necessarily a PR exercise, people called it Tony Khan, but it was him getting across what he actually does. Because no one really knows really what his job role entails. I mean, that's like most directors of football at most clubs, though. No one really knows what exactly. You know, a lot of people were blaming ticket prices on Tony Khan when, you know, he's director of football operations. That's not within his domain at all. Same with the Riverside Stand, which he mentioned towards the end of the interview. So I think it was good for, you know, us to be get on with a working relationship with someone in the club. It means we're moving forward. And it also was a good opportunity, I think, for Tony to explain some of the things he gets questioned about and explain where we're going after the entirety of last season.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's definitely a positive step, not just obviously naturally for you guys to get lots of people listening and watching your stuff, but also from the club. It shows a connection. And good intent from the fans, as you rightly say, Dom. Tony did come in for a lot of criticism last year. I've been sat here. I've heard you doing it, which is nice. Guy, off the back of that interview, having watched it, is your opinion on him changed?
Well, I was actually kind of more willing to give him the benefit of the doubt in the first place, I reckon, more so than Dom anyway.
that's most people.
I'd obviously got no experience in recruitment, but you can just tell that, like, it's players are such hit or misses, and I feel like that was the majority of the criticism towards him, as well as he was getting blamed for ticket prices, like you say. But the majority of the stuff was that he was leaving business too late, he wasn't signing the players we wanted him to be signing, and overall he was just doing bad business for Fulham, and our recruitment was poor last summer, which, you know, he kind of acknowledged. But then it was a really long and wide-ranging interview, and he covered so much. You know, it's an hour-long interview, and he spoke about in depth why deals often go down to the last day, and he gave lots of examples about where he had deals in the pipeline and he had to make a gut decision, you know, or a business decision as well as what would be best. And he acknowledged that sometimes they've worked out. So the example that he gave was getting Andreas Pereira from Manchester United on loan. So they were charging quite a big loan fee. And instead of that, we went for Stefan Johansson. We bought out Stefan Johansson outright. And then Piazon came available and there was no loan fee. So we got two players for the price of one. And he's talking about that, you know, just waiting to make a decision on players is really important in the transfer deadline day.
Yeah.
And that makes it difficult. It makes it frustrating for fans, of course. But it makes me understand a little bit more just... It's such a tough job, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and we've all been sat here as football fans. You know, when you do your transfer window and you weigh up who you've brought in and think, oh, we've had a really good window. And then 6 months later, every single one of them has flopped. And then you're sat there blaming the board. And, you know, it is harsh. It is hard. And as you say, every transfer, ultimately, it's a gamble. It really is. And so, Dom, before we do hear from Tony, has your opinion changed at all? Because as Guy mentioned, you have been a little bit more kind of outspoken in terms of your criticism of him.
I wouldn't say my opinion's changed, but I still feel the same way I do about... I do think he does avoid talking about certain topics, which I do think is within his domain. He didn't speak about... I don't think he acknowledges... He did acknowledge it, I guess, but I don't think he truly acknowledges the failure of last summer's transfer window or not. So, but I do, you know, I do think the way the Pelopi were doing it is because of how poor last season went.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting this much stick when we were doing well in the Championship. I do think plays a part. But again, I do, if he's director of football operations, I do want someone who, one, has worked in football, not their entire life, but who knows the sport, who isn't just coming into it brand new, and also someone who is actually solely focused on the job. Because, yes, he talked about, you know, I'm always thinking about Fulham, but, you know, if he's doing his stuff for the Jacksonville Jaguars, he's doing his brand new venture in All Elite Wrestling, I personally would still just rather have someone who's solely focused on that job role.
Yep. Okay, well, we will hear Tony talk about recruitment later on in the show, but first up, as mentioned, Tony joined Sammy and Jack on the latest episode of Fulhamish, and they asked him what does he think are the odds on Mitrovic staying at the club this summer.
That does include Alexander Mitrovic. I have a great relationship with him, and we've had a lot of talks, and he really loves Fulham. He loves the club. He loves the people here. He loves his teammates. He loves the cottage, and he and I get along great. He's paid me some of the nicest compliments anybody's paid me, not just in football, but in life, and he's like a really genuine person, and anybody who didn't get along with him or doesn't like him, I don't know what to say to you, because he's like one of the straightest shooters, the most honest people, hardest working guys, and just shows up to work and loves football and loves what he does. And if you don't take it seriously, if you don't take your job seriously, and if you're stealing from the football club by not earning your keep, then he'll be the first person to call you out. And I really like that accountability. We really made a big move to get him here and a big investment to get him here. And I believe in him, and I believe it was a great investment for us. And, you know, clearly in the promotion, it paid off. And then this year, I still think he went out and played so hard for us every week, no matter where we stood in the table. And he sets a great tone in the dressing room and on the pitch. And I would love to do everything I can to get Mitro back. And I am doing everything I can to keep him.
I like that. Phrase stealing from the club as opposed to players not pulling their weight, not like that he's been so open in terms of kind of going all in. So yeah, thoughts on Tony's thoughts on Mitrovic. Kind of said a little bit kind of what we kind of already knew and what we hoped he'd say. You know, he has found a home at Fulham, and he does very much like being there, but naturally the question has to be asked, because he is a Premier League level striker, isn't he, and Fulham aren't going to be operating at that level next season.
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it backs up what all the rumours have been this summer and what all the fans have been saying. You know, it looks like Mitrovic wants to stay. Yes, I think he wants to stay, but he's not going to pursue a move away.
Yeah.
I think it's the way it's going to see. You know, the club, he's a player to build around, and I think we've said it in previous weeks that, you know, our season, it's not that it solely relies on whether Mitrovic stays or goes, but I think it, from what we're challenging for next season, it does. I think if Mitrovic stays, we can easily challenge for top six, top two, whereas Mitrovic leaves, we're going to be struggling to fight for top six, because if he leaves, let's say, late in the window, we've got to find a number nine who's going to be bagging 20 goals in the league next season.
Yeah, and as we all know, that's not easily done. And as well, you know that, you know, when you've got these set of players, they're not all suited for playing in this different level, but we know already that Mitrovic will do the job in the Championship. He's well worth keeping hold of, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that Tony also said, particularly about his day-to-day at the moment, was about he did use the phrase getting our own house in order, and part of that is, you know, keeping hold of players, like making sure Johansson comes back. We're going to get onto camera in a minute, but making sure that Mitrovic stays, basically, making sure he's happy. We've seen that he's been offered a new contract. We've already given a new contract to Tom Kearney. I think at the moment he's concerned about keeping the squad together. And obviously, as we spoke about last week, Mitrovic is a key part of that. And as Dom says, he, for me, is the difference between a promotion challenge and mid-table mediocrity. It's that simple. Like, even if we were to replace him with, say, Dwight Gayle, who we're perennially linked with, even if we were to like replace him with him, like, I don't think
he's not as much of a talisman as Mitrovic is.
He wouldn't bring enough firepower to get us where we need to be. It's mad, because I never thought that we would rely on a player so much, but especially in the Championship.
Well, we've never been really a team to have one striker and allowing him to score all our goals.
Yeah.
Our last striker who'd be bagging in goals left, right, and centre. You can look at McCormick, but not. I don't think he's that. I'm thinking Louis Saha.
I was going to say. I was saying
yeah.
Louis Saha.
Yeah, I'm thinking Louis Saha.
No, I think you're doing McCormick a disservice there. I think he did keep us up for like 2 years.
I think he was also the reason we finished so low.
But what? Because we relied on him so much.
Because all of his money was going on McCormack, no?
Well, I just think people were with Mitrovic, I think players were working off him. Whereas with McCormack, I didn't feel like players were working off him. I feel like players were pushing on him to be honest on him to score all the goals.
But he did it, and he kept us up in the championship. So like,
I think it did show once we did move him on that the team started to perform better.
We wanted him to stay though. Slav said that he wanted him to stay anyway, and who knows if he had stayed, you know, Slav's football would have come in over that summer. As it did, and we would have gone up automatically that year instead of having a late playoff charge.
Mm. Just a little bit of breaking news coming to you this evening here at Love Sport. Not quite Fulham related, Manchester United, but Crystal Palace. Aaron Wan-Bissaka. The story is, the reports are that he's actually heading up to Manchester this evening to have his medical ahead of a believed to be a £50 million move from Crystal Palace to Manchester United. But playing devil's advocate, chaps, a little bit with Mitrovic. If a deal does happen, naturally we want it, if it does happen, to happen as soon as possible to give you the ultimate length of time to bring someone in. But what kind of fee do you think he would command?
I can't see the club selling him for less than 30.
Yeah.
Because we paid 20.
Do you think he did enough, particularly last season, for clubs to be I don't think coming forward with that kind of money?
That should we wait for to be seen on that. But I think the club will not sell him for anything less than £30 million. We spent £20 million on him last season. He doesn't really want to leave the club. I don't think
there's not a need to sell him.
Yeah, we don't need to sell him. So the only way he's going to leave is if someone gives us an offer we can't refuse.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to match his wages, what I think are around £90,000-£100,000 a week. You know, I think that can only be a Premier League side, or if he goes, there was rumours from offers from China in January. So I mean, if I'm looking at it, the only teams I can see going in for him is, obviously, West Ham have been linked, but if Crystal Palace sell, obviously, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, they do have then the money then to go in for a player like Mitrovic, and they do need that focal point up front if they're not able to get Michy Batshuayi in. So, yeah, I do think that it's not a case of, are we going to sell Mitrovic or not? I think it's a case of, is a team going to come in and pay the money for him?
Yeah. Okay, then, well, if Mitrovic is sold, Abubakar Kamara could perhaps play. Let's hear what Tony Khan had to say. The boys posed him the question if he thinks they'll have a part to play next season.
I do think as a starter, he can be very effective too. And you're right, he can be effective off the bench as well. And I think at times he scored off the bench for us, but has also been dangerous as a starter. You know, the Leicester game scored in the starting lineup. And he does have his detractors. And obviously, I think like a lot of young people, you know, there's maturity as you get older, you get wiser. And with him, you know, having talked to the squad, they want him back. And I know as a football club, you know, we wanted him back too. And the question was, did he want to come back and be a part of the club again and, you know, embrace the kind of success we had 2 years ago and get back to doing that? And he does. So I do expect Abu's going to be back with us next year.
No, Tony, the question is, do you boys want him back?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, 100%. Yes.
Dom?
I do. I think that...
Oh, I'm surprised.
No. I don't...
That ruined the next 5 minutes of radio for me.
In the Premier League, I don't think he's got a place. But in the Championship, I think he does. He did prove to be an asset. And Tony Khan did mention it, that when... Obviously, he started the second leg against Derby. He started in the playoff final, two of our biggest wins of last season in the magnitude of the games. And I don't think through the middle, I don't think that's what he offers in Championship. But out wide, he's got that raw pace. Although he doesn't know what to do once he beats his man. He sort of just... but that's why the defender can't track him. If he doesn't know what he's going to do, the defender's not going to know what to do. So I think that, yeah, Kamara as an asset next season is going to be good. I don't know. I do still think we need to get a winger in. I know we've got Ayise and Cabano sit at the club next season with Kamara if Tony Khan wants him to stay. So, yeah, I do think he's got a part to play next season, whether he's a key player or not, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think I remember Dean Jones, who's a friend of the pods. I think he called him the worst ever Premier League player.
He did, which I thought was harsh. I remember that. He tweeted that. And I thought, Dean, hang about. I mean, as you say, he's not, you know, blessed like a, I don't know.
It's weird though, because
he has limitations.
Because Dean's not the kind of bloke to make like rash statements like that.
I was surprised.
He's usually quite calm and composed with what he's got to say, and he's like, no, he's the worst player the Premier League's ever seen.
Yeah, brutal.
As Dom said, he's a threat. He's an absolute weapon.
AK-47. He is an absolute weapon.
He is an absolute weapon. We'll leave it there. We'll leave it there. Abubakar Kamara is an absolute weapon. I need to take a break. We come back. I'm sure you've seen it already, Fulham fans. We've got a new kit out. We'll have a little bit of chat about that. Also, before the end of the show, we'll talk about fixtures. Those were released, of course, over the past week since the chaps were last here. And, of course, also hear more from Tony Khan. We'll talk about the recruitment and the transfer business. You listen to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
It is Love Sport, and it's the Fulham Fan Show. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. We've got Dom Betts and Guy Barlow from the Fulhamish Pod. I've been hearing from Tony Khan. The boys did an interview with him earlier on in the week. We'll hear more on that later on. But interestingly, new kit released today. There's other things to talk about, what we can read into from that release. But first up, I've seen a lot of love for that kit. I mean, to me, it just looks white.
Yeah, to me, it just looks like a generic Adidas T-shirt with Fulham logo put on a
on Love Hearts. Like, well, it's nice. I've always liked the Fulham kit, but it's kind of just white.
It's a white shirt with three stripes down either side with the Fulham badge. Because the Fulham badge is on, they can put another £30 on it, basically.
Yeah, but what do you want?
No, I'm not criticising.
we play on white.
No, of course. Of course. And I always think it's saying, how do you do every single year a slight variation on what is effectively, for any football club, the same colours? It is hard.
I think, you know, people have said, you know, it's a bit meh. It's a bit simple. But as I said to Dom...
My main issue is it's a V-neck.
No, the away kit's a V-neck. The home kit.
I don't see, right? What we need for this new kit every year.
I know,
don't get it.
That is the real kind of... But that's the way the game's gone, isn't it?
The rule of thumb should just be every 2 years, maybe. I don't know. I don't really care about new kits because I'm not going to buy one.
If you really
want a kit so much, wait till the season, get it in the clearance sale for £20.
Yeah.
20 quid, thank you.
But then... I don't know, like, it's simple, yeah. You know, there isn't, like, a fancy collar or, like, anything on the sleeves. But there might well be a sponsor on the sleeve. But there is, like, more to it, really. I mean, like you said, the three stripes down the sides. We can talk about the fact we got another betting company again. And Defabet have got a bit of a curse, don't they? A lot of teams have been relegated.
What's the Defabet curse?
They relegate a lot of teams.
I'm going to look into this
relegated
right now.
Well, I feel like they just played for a lot of teams who have got relegated.
I'm going to type into my search engine, Defabet curse.
It exists.
Sunderland definitely got relegated wearing it. Villa, I'm pretty sure, got relegated wearing it. Like, it's a curse. Everyone said this when we made them our official sponsor last season.
Oh, dear.
What? Defabet curse.
100% record. No, it's not really.
Well, they were a sponsor last year, weren't they? Definitely.
Yeah. But
they got us relegated as well.
when they became our sponsor, everyone was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, our blue, what's the blue? Was our third, second, was it away kit or third shot?
Oh, it was away kit.
And then everyone was like, that just looks like Sunderland 2012.
But there is overall in the launch, there's a lot to read into it in terms of. I know you don't want to go crazy and like read too much into it, but you know Zambo and Guise is in it.
Yeah, who's tearing up the African Cup of Nations?
Yeah, so I've heard. Meat shows in the away kit. Marlon Fossey's there. Steven Sess. Like, these are players who you know we'd hope to see featuring next year. Yeah. And it's a pretty it's kind of a
statement of intent.
It
absolutely.
Is, yeah, definitely.
You've got what, however many players you could put forward for doing this, and they would all contractually obliged have to do it if the owners asked them to do it. The fact they've put someone like Anguissa forward absolutely does suggest that he will be a Fulham player next season, because it's rather embarrassing having to rip that down from the club shop, you know, once he's sold a few weeks later.
It's like the Ireland FA tweeting happy birthday to Declan Rice.
Yeah,
and then him, and then him like declaring for England.
It
like
was
a day
funny
later.
How he got voted Ireland's Young Player of the Year.
Yeah, I mean that shouldn't have been allowed to happen. I suppose that's a.
I know he got voted before he like declared for England, but because they now
change it.
Nobody is sat there waiting. Well, I wonder who the Republic of Ireland's Young Player of the Year is. But nobody notices if you don't do that.
Cyrus Christie won a few years ago.
It was
at age of like 24.
It wasn't a public vote either. Their board did it. like just reverse it. Just change your mind.
Exactly. Just lie. Anyway, Anguissa, interestingly, you know, as you mentioned, it was almost a presumption, or certainly a thought, that he wouldn't be here next season, along with other guys who came in for a fair amount of cash last year. I mean, is he someone you want to stick around? Did he show enough towards the back end that he's worthwhile?
In the games we won, he was very, very good. And yeah. I think if you look at Serie, I don't think his stock has fallen, but teams are still interested in John Miguel Serie, because they know what he's capable of. You know, he's been linked with Napoli, linked with Inter Milan, linked with AC Milan.
Purely blame Fulham for his downfall.
Yeah, linked with Monaco. So I think, you know, we'll still be able to sell him on for £15 million or so. And Anguissa, obviously, we spent £30 million, I think, on what it was. And
Rising 2, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting, because everyone talks about the cash of John Miguel Serie, don't they? It was mega money, but Anguissa wasn't a million miles from it.
He's our club record signing. Technically. I think it was 22 million rising to 30.
There was definitely no performance bonuses reached.
Marseille have received nothing else yet.
If we win the Premier League, it goes up to 30. I don't know.
But if he stays, it's great, because I think he'd be the Yaya Toure of the Championship.
He will be the Yaya Toure. Even better. Box to box. It's funny how that was a criticism of him last year. That it's like, he's not a defensive midfielder. He's not an attacking midfielder. Right. He's not a box to box. He's not good enough to do any of them.
That used to be what a midfielder was.
Yeah, but now in the Championship, he might be good enough to do one of those.
He's basically going
to
be like he's basically going to be Leroy Fer part two.
I'm not sure about that.
I think he was a quality player.
Yeah, Leroy Fer was a strange one. He just jumped from club to club. Each club would get relegated each time. He'd get a big move on fairly amount of money. He scored a couple of eye-catching goals, but other than that, not a lot.
If you think with Anguissa, I just feel like he'll just bully players in the Championship.
Yeah, he will. And just like Mitro did. Yeah, but I think Leroy Fer was a poor... Fer is like a Nigel Kwasi slash Roger
Kwasi,
Roger Johnson,
the relegation king.
You don't want to be compared to Leroy Fer.
We can have a solid call here, though. If you think about it, you have Betts in goal. Mawson looks like staying at centre back if he can stay fit.
Yeah,
you got Anguissa and Kearney through the middle with Mitrovic up top.
Yeah,
that's a solid spine.
Good 5-a-side team. That.
Sorry, did he start with a Fabry in goal? I assume, yeah.
Oh yeah, for Fabry, yeah. He's almost definitely off, because it was the only goalkeeper that Tony Khan failed to mention.
Yeah.
Or did he?
Because he said Marcus Bettinelli's going to be his first choice, with Marek Rodak, because he had a good loan spell at Rotherham last season.
Good two seasons with Rotherham.
Yeah, good two seasons with Rotherham and he thinks they're going to be key. And one thing he actually did mention, talking about the season before when he was at League One, the reason why we weren't loaning out players, Tony Khan, was saying that, well, at the time, Opta weren't doing data analysis on League One and League Two. So he was like, well, I'm not going to loan players if I can't...
You can't track them.
If I can't track how they're playing.
I mean, still, that's an interesting... I think it's still be a worthwhile...
it would have been worth to loan them out. But when it comes to Anguissa, he's tearing up the African Cup of Nations this season. To quote our very own David Preston, he said, "Zambo on form is like watching Mufasa stride through the pride lands of Africa."
Right.
So,
right,
you know, okay. I think if he could
one for you Lion King fans out there.
Yeah, he could be one of our most important players next season.
Yeah.
He really could be. But then you look at it and, you know, Johansson seems to be staying. Where do they fit? Because they're kind of be playing the same role. Maybe they're not the same type of player, obviously, but we're playing the same role. McDonald's sitting in behind, I'd expect. Unless McDonald's on detox again after another heavy summer. I mean,
that was another thing that Tony Khan mentioned. We're obviously going to keep going back to it, so no apologies for that. But he mentioned how the over-celebrating last summer, perhaps.
Right.
And we certainly know Kevin McDonald over-celebrated last summer, don't we?
The videos are like the first week of their pre-season training camp, and he was just on the bikes.
I remember years ago when he signed for Burnley, there was some joke made about when he left... that all the kebab houses in Burnley were going to go out of business.
Really?
Yeah, he's basically just... It's followed him for many years. Oh, Kevin's lack of discipline.
What
off
a top
the
bloke.
Pitch.
What a bloke, yeah.
Yeah. something to pick up on, though. You said that... Tony said that Betts was going to be number one next season?
Yeah.
Should he be saying that?
Well, he's...
No. I think he said that they were going to challenge each other.
Okay. Because you know what I mean? I wouldn't want my owner to be saying that. You'd want the manager saying
by the process of elimination. That's what Tony Khan was saying.
Yeah.
Scott might be sat there thinking, I want to bring a goalkeeper because I don't want Bettinelli.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But it was like a direct question from Samuel Jack, who said, who do you expect to be in goal next year? And he was like, well, Betts will probably challenge with Rodak. But he did also talk about, you know, the fact that his owner involvement. You know, he's never had any say tactically. He's never said you need to be playing blah blah blah, which is brilliant. He spoke about.
Well, I wish he would say it more under Ranieri, to be honest.
Yeah,
yeah.
But Ranieri linked with Newcastle job. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. You know, Ranieri becoming their manager.
I mean, Jake would love him.
I'm obviously not fair for me to comment, is it?
But no, I do think under Ranieri a few times. I wish he did say something. But you know, it's good to see that he is leaning towards the manager. And I think, as I said, if we're going back to the new kits, one, you look at the other thing is actually not just you've got, you know, the likes of Anguissa and Mitrovic in there, but you've got Marlon Fossey and Stephen Sessegnon in there.
Yeah.
Two young players. Obviously, Marlon Fossey had a horrific injury last season where he missed about 8 or 9 months. And he's come back and, you know, he's seen as one of our most promising prospects. He was on the preseason tour with the team last season over in France, you know, and in Germany as well, in the one of the best preseason tournaments of all time, the Cup Editions, which was one of the funniest penalty shootouts I've ever seen, where the goalkeepers were just diving the wrong way every single time.
I've literally never heard of this competition, nor did I see this penalty shootout.
Oh, it was Favre dived the wrong way every single time.
Well, that's not his fault, is it?
It is his fault.
Well, after the show, me and
then you said Jordan Pickford.
It's good penalties. Yeah. It's Favre's a top goalkeeper.
Quickly on those young players that you mentioned as well. I'm not sure if you discussed it on previous shows, but I saw somebody.
It was Harvey Elliott linked with Barcelona, Real Madrid.
I'm trying to think who I posted it. It was Cam. He posted
Instagram
it.
Post from Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, and he posted the Instagram post from Harvey effectively saying goodbye. Has this been discussed?
Well, but then someone did say maybe he's just saying goodbye to all the people who haven't been given contracts.
Nah, he was saying goodbye.
Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I know he's 16, but yeah, that felt very much like a good book. I'm sure he mentioned coaches as well.
The coaches might be leaving.
I don't think. Well, I don't know.
I think
it felt very much like a goodbye, didn't it? Because there has been obviously rumours.
Well, his contract
he'll be off.
Expiring, as far as I'm aware. Yeah. He hasn't signed.
And
a pro contract. Yeah. If he's gonna reject it and want to go think and somehow thinks he's good enough to play for Real Madrid or Barcelona after playing 30 minutes against Wolves and a 20 minutes against Millwall in the cup, then fair play to him. But I do think that he's not going to start for us next season. But he's not going to start for RB Leipzig, Real Madrid or Barcelona. I don't see what has gone through his head. Probably that terrible Barnet didn't help.
Oh, I'm just looking at the pineapple lid.
Yeah.
But no, they'll not be a part of you, though, Dom, as a Fulham fan. To think, you know, if one of your players came through and got picked off by one of those super clubs, are not a little bit of kind of pride thinking...
Yeah, but Dale Jennings did, so...
And yeah, well, but also, it's actually happening... I don't know. I guess you've got to trust the academy coaches, but quite a few players, young players, do seem to be leaving quite recently. With that Icelandic lad,
who was John Dagger Thorsteinsson.
Yeah, who was talked
well
about.
Said.
I could be totally wrong. I knew it was someone like that, but I didn't want to embarrass myself.
As long as you say it confidently,
yeah,
it sounds
yes,
right.
Deliver with confidence. Yeah, and nobody will question
England.
It.
England, but yeah, so he left, and we've had another few young players leaving. Like Matt O'Reilly's been linked away as well. So it is maybe something. Yes, there is a bit of pride, but it is maybe something to be concerned about long term. I'd say.
Okay, right, I need to take a break. It's from Fanshawe here on Love Sport Radio. As I said, we will hear more from that Tony Khan interview before the end of the show, but up next, we'll do the fixture release dates because they were happening in the past week. Naturally, all you Fulham fans are planning the next year, where you're going to be on various days, your Boxing Day, your Easters, your opening days, your last days. You know how it is. We'll do that next.
This is Love Sport.
Okay, we'll hear more from Tony Khan very, very shortly, but it was the fixtures released earlier on in the week, or before, well, the last time. What is it? Before the last time we were here, or
yeah, it was
after the last, I don't know. You know what
it was
I mean.
Last Thursday.
You haven't discussed it before on the show, have you?
No, I don't want to tempt fate on future fan shows, but there is an awful lot to discuss considering, like, in the middle of June. There's a lot to get through. I mean, the fixtures are obviously really exciting. Let's kick off Barnsley away.
Oh, what a day.
Love it.
I like Oakwell.
Yeah, I tell you why.
It is a good away day.
Yeah,
it's class. Definitely.
Oh, I thought you were being sarcastic.
No, I wasn't.
But don't people, when you go up to the Premier League and everyone complains, oh, I'd much rather be in the Championship. I'm sure you've done that loads
of
times,
Dom. Barnsley over, like, yeah, Palace, exactly. Everton.
I quite like Everton.
No,
even though we always lose there, it's quite a good ground.
Give me Barnsley every day.
Over Southampton or somewhere, or Leicester.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm literally sat right here. I mean, I was thinking it as well, but you don't need to say it.
yeah,
Barnsley is an interesting one because obviously they're newly promoted, you're newly relegated, but it's by no means a gimme. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the other sides promoted, I think that Barnsley, it's going to be a tough trip, but also it's going to be an interesting introduction, though, to some of the other players. You talk about Anguissa saying, you know what, I reckon he's going to, you know, dominate the Championship next season. Well, he needs to kind of do it at these kind of games, doesn't it? It's all well and good doing it at home against Barnsley and whatnot, but he needs to go off to these games, and he won't have played. I mean,
Scorley Woodrow
done, but
before
the Scorley Woodrow Derby.
Yeah,
it's the big one.
It's the big one. He's going to score.
Yes.
He's 100% going to score.
And is he
going
to be a,
he's gonna celebrate
a
as
shirt
well.
Off cupping?
Yes, he's cupping the away end. It'll add a by all the away end.
Yeah. And we will boo him for it. I'll happily boo him even if he hasn't scored.
Yeah.
He's a terrible player.
Yeah, he's awful.
Well, not in League One, I should
say. Yeah, in say. League One, he's a bagged man. But in the Championship, I don't rate him whatsoever. But yeah, no, Barnsley, good place to start. You know, we've got a decent record there. I think we've been there twice when they were in the Championship. Well, we beat, was it 4-2 and was it 2-1 or 3-1? 3-1. So what, we got 7 goals in 2 games against them?
Yeah, and well, the McDonald goal to make it 2-1.
Goal is one way you can describe that masterpiece.
I mean, are you of the opinion that any goal was a good goal? Because this was certainly not a good goal.
This was a wonder
was
goal.
It was a thing of beauty.
This was a wonder goal.
Is it not something that's racking up the views on YouTube?
It came off his like back or something. And, like,
some of the best ones have.
Like keeper flaps at it and it like just went over the line.
And, like, it on the line.
It was goal line technology and like, oh, it was an absolute mess. But it was a 90th minute winner, so you can't complain, can you?
And then we scored again.
Effectively a winner. Yeah. It was the winner.
And then Cesc came at the back post and scored again, which that ball by Cabano for... I think it is Cabano for Cesc's winner. Oh, the third goal anyway. It just took forever to get to the back post and no one seemed to attempt to get the ball.
Yeah, defender completely missed it as well. That was a great game for another reason as well, because it also had one of the finest moments of Housery by Johansson, where Barnsley fullback running through the midfield quite fast. Steph Joe hacks him down, as he does, takes the yellow, gets up, and then the Barnsley player's fuming. He comes over and like pushes him quite high up, and Steph goes down holding his face, and Barnsley player gets sent off.
Beautiful.
Absolute wonderful
the
moment.
The pair of you two. apart from the obvious highlight of Oakwell, Barnsley away, what is it that you look for straight away on fixture release? Particular teams, particular dates?
Well, Wigan is the one you have to look for straight away, and there's no other two ways about it.
You're going to have to explain.
Because Wigan away is the best away in the Football League, as far as I'm concerned.
Why?
It's just class.
I mean, not even the Wigan fans like going to Wigan. But so why do you like going to Wigan?
You can get a Wigan kebab, though.
What's different between a Wigan kebab?
You usually have meat inside a wrap.
Yeah.
You put a pie in there instead.
Right.
It's absolutely class. No, I like Wigan away just because it's a direct train. There's no changing involved.
Yeah.
Straight up to Wigan, Northwestern.
Couple of decent boozers.
Yeah, a couple of different boozers.
There's a great boozer outside the station, isn't there?
No, there actually is.
You get the entire way. Not often will ever sell it all, but you get the entire stand behind the goal. It's always good fun. We got it last day of the season this time, so that should be a battle of laughs.
Promotion party.
Yeah exactly.
But relegation 6 points.
Another game everyone always looks for is Reading away, so they make sure they're busy on that day. Luckily, we've got it on a Tuesday night this season, so we don't have to. No, I'll still probably go because it's on a Tuesday. It's good we don't have to waste a Saturday going to Reading.
Yes,
right?
is this
purely? Am I missing a rivalry here, or do you simply dislike Reading as the place?
I think they want a rivalry with us. They're desperate for one because they haven't got anyone. They've got Swindon, who are in League Two or whatever.
They said, they were singing "We Hate Swindon," and then Swindon were like, "We don't care about you." If Swindon are saying "We don't care about you," you need to sort your life out. It's just a pain to get to. The ground is nowhere near anything.
Oh yeah, and they list their number 12 as the fans.
Oh, do they?
On the team sheet? Yeah. Which is, but no, yeah. I remember when we beat them 5-0, we were singing, and that was their big day out. So it's 5-0 on your big day out. How do you feel?
Yeah.
But they did beat us in the playoffs.
I mean, obviously, yeah.
However, there actually is a little rivalry.
Yeah, Boxing Day is another one we look for. Obviously, we knew we were going to be away from home because the Premier League fixtures released the week before, and we knew Chelsea were home, so there's no chance we were. And we got Luton away. There's been mixed views on this.
Ooh. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan because, you know, it could have been so much worse. We've had Bournemouth, we've had Ipswich, we've had Derby. You know, we could have been going a lot further than Luton, which is what, for me, from South London, like an hour drive on the M25.
40-minute train, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not the end of the world, you know, Luton away. So I think that, you know, for Boxing Day, it could have been a lot worse. You know, we could have been going to somewhere like Stoke.
Or Middlesbrough.
Or Blackburn. Like, but yeah, no, I think, and obviously Leeds away is obviously on a midweek night.
Of course
We wouldn't have any other way. I think this makes it 4 years out of five it's been on a Tuesday or Wednesday night.
What about Bristol City away is also not on a Tuesday night this year,
yeah,
but it normally is.
Yeah.
And Forest away is always on a weeknight as well.
Yeah, the funniest thing about the Leeds and Forest away is when we've had them on a midweek night, they're nearly always on the same game week as well. So yeah. Always at the same time, either September or August. Yeah, but we're looking at like our opening games. You know, we start off, obviously, as you said, away to Barnsley, then got Blackburn at home, away to Huddersfield, Millwall at home, Forest at home, and Cardiff away. It's an odd first sort of 5-6 fixtures because it sounds easy, but then we're still playing two of the teams who came down with us.
Yeah, we are playing two of the teams, but I don't think Huddersfield will challenge next.
No,
year,
I don't think so. Either. But I think Cardiff will.
But Cardiff will, yeah. And it's our sixth game of the season, is that right?
Yeah.
So we'll both be up and running by then.
Blackburn, Millwall, and Forest is first three home games.
Yeah, that's what jumps out. They're all winnable.
I'd expect. I'm. You know, it's a bit high, but I think you have to be getting 9 points out of that. Minimum seven, because like they're the games. It's not like the Premier League where we're all like. You know, if we want to get promoted, those are the games you need to be winning.
No, I agree. I do agree. Right, we do actually need to take a break. As promised, Tony Khan, we need to hear from him. We've got a couple of other things from him. He's going to talk about transfers, which I know was a huge topic of debate, not only last summer, but also then constantly as a knock-on effect throughout the entire season. He had some interesting views on that. We'll hear from Tony next.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
This is the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport. Jay Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. We've got Don Betts and Guy Barlow from the Fulhamish pod in the studio. And as mentioned throughout the show, it was a big week for the pod. They managed to sit down with Tony Khan. He's got a whole host of titles. We're going with Big Dog this evening. Let's hear from him now. We'll talk about what he said afterwards. We'll start, though, with deadline day. Tony explained why he tends to do a lot of his transfer business very late on in the window.
People who don't think I tried to get Matt Target back here, I did try to get Matt Target. I made a really good offer to get Matt back here. They had rejected it, and they'd come in with their asking price, which I thought was very high. It was $20 million. And I said, I can't do that. And, I'm going to go take Joe Bryan from Aston Villa right now. And apparently, you know, had I waited to the deadline, they would have actually accepted that, but I had gotten the business done 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
So you never know, going down to the wire, sometimes it works for you, sometimes it doesn't. But I've found you do get better prices on waiting, and much better, sometimes half of what people were trying to get a month earlier, a week earlier, a day earlier. It's just crazy. So,
but then you have the problem, obviously, of players not being settled when they come into the team, which
so
I guess
it's a trade-off. I guess
it's a trade-off, and I don't want to. And obviously, look, like, was Mitro unsettled when he got here?
Yeah. It depends who. Yeah, exactly. On the player in this stage, it makes perfect sense in many regards. That's business, right?
Yeah, it's hard, and there's no perfect answer to this. I mean, you could pay more and get him done early and have the peace of mind, but how do you know that a better player isn't going to come available? You know, if I had taken Okaka and we had done Okaka and then we'd already spent the money and we hadn't had the money, which at the time Mitro was especially for us where we were coming from, he was making good money at Newcastle, and it was not a cheap move for us coming in the championship, and it was a big wage to take on, and I wouldn't have been able to do it if I had taken on another player sooner. So again, that's where waiting sometimes to get the best possible player that you want can pay off, even chasing it down to the last minute. And I had a backup plan had that not come through at the last minute that we would have done. But, that came through, and I was glad I waited. And then there have been other times where I didn't wait and I regretted it. There have been times where I waited too long. And I think there's not one perfect answer to that. But like you said, that's just business. And I would like to get some stuff done early. But right now, I think we have some questions as to who from the current squad is going to be here next year. And I think I'd like to get some of those answered before we make big commitments, because, I think we have some players that would be very, very, very good for us next year.
There we are. That was Tony talking about why he does the business particularly late, just like so many managers do or football clubs do. And it is a bit frustrating, isn't it, as football fans sometimes. You understand. I do anyway. I can't quite understand why there is this huge excitement around deadline day and why clubs operate in that way, because I've never personally felt like you would be more likely to get a better deal on deadline day. I feel it's actually probably the other way, that people then can ask for so much because you're so pushed for time.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of deadline day at all. I think I'd rather get my business done on July the 22nd or whatever, or ahead of the first preseason tour. Like, I think that if you look at, I think it, what it does, if you're bringing in one or two players to add to the bidding you've already done, then fine. But if you look at what Fulham did last August deadline day, it just wasn't what was needed. We brought in, what, four or five players? You know, you think Vieto, Fosu Mensah, obviously Anguissa. So I don't know. Like, I would rather we get our business done early. But one point he does make is, not about deadline day, but about signings in general, is that, especially when you've been relegated, it's vitally important. I think it is important that we know who's leaving the club. Because then you need to know, then you have your squad to build around and know what sort of players you want to bring in. So I think the most important thing for Fulham in this summer transfer window is not looking who we're going to bring in, is getting the players who don't want to be here or who we're going to move on, get them out as soon as possible, because then we can build on next season and solely focus on our squad. Because, you know, Seri, Sessegnon are two players I expect to leave this summer. I expect Fabbri to leave this summer. He's not really been in the plans for about the last year anyway. I do think it's vitally important we get, I'm not saying kick them out of the club, but it's what we find suitors for them as quick as possible.
Yeah,
so we can just slowly find who the players we have for next season are, build around them, and then we know where we need to improve on. Because let's say somehow Sessegnon ends up staying and he's our left winger for next season, then we don't need to go out and buy a winger next season. But if he does go, then we do need to go and get a wide player. You know, if another team came with Cyrus Christie, let's say, or something, you know, we can't just rely on...
Please.
Yeah, please. I'm hoping it, but it means we go out and buy a championship level right back. You know, because we wouldn't be relying on Steven Sessegnon and Marlon Fossey here. So I think it's vitally important. The most important thing the club do this summer is get the players who don't want to be here, who are going to be leaving, out the door as soon as possible.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, as I said earlier, that's the kind of impression that TK gave off as well, that he, like I said, wants to get the house ordered and wants to sort everything out and make sure we are in the best possible place to react to any outgoings and strengthen them in areas we need to. I'm sure, you know, he said that they had an earlier start this year. We were relegated on like just April.
I was on holiday and I think I flew out on like the 1st of April and
first
night.
Just about April. So
he's saying it from about February though.
I said it when we lost to Burnley, and was it July the 7th or July? Oh, not July, it was January the 7th.
I was going to say
January the 12th.
It was definitely not July.
Yeah.
But either way, like.
I meant last year.
Yeah. They have had a long time to prepare for the window so far. It's interesting that Scott Parker seems to be more involved than previous managers as well. That's something that TK mentioned. And he's really went into like the two-tick system that they have, which is again, a really, really interesting insight. I'd be surprised if they haven't got backups for Seri and Sess already lined up, you know? Yeah.
We've got Matt O'Reilly, so that's Seri sorted.
And as you say, we do need to get him out sooner rather than later. I mean, Sess's hamstring injury might affect that, and obviously Seri's at the AFCON right now. So, you know, there's only so much they can do in terms of actually getting it done.
Well, you mentioned of Scott's involvement in transfers. Let's hear now from Tony. Sammy and Jack posed the question to him. How much does he get involved in the transfers? When we say he, I mean Tony. Let's hear what he had to say.
Everybody, it's strange that nobody wants to be, it's bizarre, actually, that people point to this one player and they're like, well, the best player we got, you had nothing to do with. Ladies and gentlemen, I had everything to do with it. I paid the money. I'm the one that went to my father and said, like, this is going to be the most expensive player we've ever taken in the championship on wage, and I want to do it. I think we need to do it. And to get promoted, where, you know, people forget. I think I asked you guys this before we went on the air, but generally when I ask people, hey, where do you think we were on the table the day he came in, the deadline day when Mitro and Cyrus Christie came in, they generally say, 14th, 15th, 16th, 12th, whatever. And we were in 6th. We had already played our way back into position, and we really needed to do something to make a splash, because I thought at the time we had a team that was good enough to go to the playoffs. I wanted to get auto-promoted, and I thought, you know, hey, if we go 23 unbeaten, we probably would have gotten enough to get auto-promoted.
Hey, if that season was two or three games longer, we would have made it. Time was against us that season.
Or if we'd started playing better sooner.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't play well. So I don't think I've gotten a fair shake on the recruitment stuff, to be honest with you guys. I also think that this year, I deserved a lot of the stick I got. So it works both ways. It's just hard. But for whatever reason, I don't know. It feels like when some of the things have gone well, it's like people don't want to believe that those things came through a computer. Like, how could a, you know, but a lot of those good things did come through a computer. And so we have a process that I really believe in, and I believe has been very effective for us in the championship.
Very open and honest from Tony talking about his role. Naturally, he's saying he's not pushing the blame onto anyone else. You know, he's saying that I am the man behind the transfers. It's kind of on my head. You take the rough with the smooth. You know, when it's good, you naturally take the plaudits, but at the same time, you know, when transfers don't work out, it is on his head. And you know, I suppose, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make up for it, Dom, but it goes a certain way, doesn't it, to understanding and warming to the man in terms of, you know, accepting responsibility when things haven't worked out. That this is a guy, because again, I remember having this conversation when you were criticizing him, saying that I'd much rather have someone like Tony at my club than, I'm not going to name other examples, but you know, basically someone who is so involved and is so keen and so eager. I'd much rather have that person making mistakes than somebody who is kind of almost an absent owner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd like how involved Tony does get, because he clearly has a massive passion for this football club, and he spoke about it multiple times. And you know, he does admit that we did make mistakes in that last summer transfer window. I don't necessarily think that was down to the all on the caliber of player we brought in. I do think it's got to do with the timing, and that's his why he is preferring buying players later on in the window. But he did speak about how it was down to him to bring Mitrovic in, which is often misconstrued, because a lot of people thought, oh, he worked on the Slav at Partizan Belgrade, or he's a good mate of Slav, so Slav brought him over from Anderlecht. But you know, Tony Khan's adamant that it was all down to him. And yeah, yes, he probably came with Slavica Kanovic's recommendation, but he went out, paid the money, got the player in. So I think that, you know, when we look at recruitment in the Championship, the recruitment was pretty good. If I'm looking, there was a few mishaps in like Zachariah Labyad and players of that caliber. But
Sigurdsson, as Tony Khan mentions,
yeah,
you know, went out and spent a bit of money on Sigurdsson, who was over 28, which is, you know, not the policy. And it was a World Cup buy as well, which we all know don't do. And he was a flop by all accounts, wasn't he? He was not good enough for the Championship, and he loaned out to Rim Kazan.
Scored a brace for Iceland in the last international break, mate.
And he scored it on Boxing Day at Ipswich. So actually, you know what? I'm going to take it all back.
But yeah, no, I do. And he also sort of spoke about how, you know, how it is, like I just said, a two-tick system or two-box system, that it isn't just about what someone who looks good through a computer, because this isn't Football Manager. As much as I play Football Manager, I'd love to do it that way.
You're flipping good at it.
Yeah. And so maybe I should take his job. I mean, I'll be as good at it as he is if you go by my Football Manager record here. But no, I think that, you know, it isn't. He spoke about it in the interview, not a clip we haven't played, but he spoke about how it is, how he does think character references are vitally important as well, because a player can look good and all that, but if he's going to disrupt the dressing room, there's no need to have him. But then you look at someone. He spoke about Mitrovic and he spoke about Johansson, how they weren't necessarily favoured on their previous managers, like under Raf Benitez was at Newcastle. Yeah. And that, but he knew, or he felt that these players were going to be a good addition to the team, and they clearly are a big part of the team culture and the chemistry between that all the players have between themselves.
Yeah, that was interesting as well. Like, he spoke about how sometimes with signings, there are all sorts of things going on, which means they might not be playing well. And one of those things that he spoke about is that they might be playing with injury. You know, like a player might be have a horrible season, not might be a horrible form, but they might have been carrying an injury the whole time. And that's something that I never would have thought about, really, the injury aspect, playing through. He spoke about Mawson playing through injuries throughout his career so far and just being unable to this season. I mean, I said it before, but there is so much that was covered in this interview, and Mawson was a big, big part of that. If we can just move on to that, because I know that we had like two clean sheets around Christmas with Mawson in defence, and then he got injured, and we should have beat Wolves, by the way, around Christmas as well. And that was when things looked like they might have starting to click under Ranieri, and then Mawson gets injured in like a freak injury or something like that, and he was out for the rest of the season.
Like a shoelace or something.
Yeah, or something ridiculous like that. Yeah, but I do think that time, as you said, you know, when we beat Huddersfield, we drew with Wolves, we got that 0-0 draw away at Newcastle, we were on the up at that point. And I think the Mawson injury did really detract from that, because Tim Bream never really looked the same ever since he came back from his injury towards the beginning of the season. And I think Mawson, if he stayed fit, I'm not saying we necessarily would have stayed up, but he would have remained a lot more competitive. You know, he might have gone to the last game or the last two games, whatever, between us and Cardiff and Brighton. So I do think Mawson has got a big part to play this season. If he stays fit, I think he's going to be a leader from the back. Him and Ream could form a really good partnership. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to see what Mawson can do this season.
Yeah, absolutely, chaps. Been a pleasure being back in the studio, speaking to you both. As I said, Johnny will be back next week for the Fulham fan show. Hopefully, though, I'll see you very, very soon. And once again, really good to hear from Tony Khan, hopefully building some bridges with the Fulham fans after last season. This has been the Fulham fan show, and it is on Love Sport Radio.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.